Okay, good morning. We are, today is the 12th of October 2018, Gimel Marach Shavan, 2000, Tavshin Ayin Tes, Halacha Day for Perek Dalet of Bamidbar. So it was all about the discussion of wrapping up about how the Kohanim would wrap up the Kelim and would send them along with the Leviim, as well as the other objects in the Midbar were sent along with the Leviim. Now, I believe we will read later on that they used carts. In order to transfer the planks that were used for the Mishkan, so they put onto carts. So what are we going to do with Halacha Day from this parak? So there is a very important halacha, which at least the three people in the front of this room are often involved in, and that is the Malacha of Hotzah, the prohibition of carrying on Shabbos. Not that we're involved with the prohibition of carrying on Shabbos, but that we're involved with avoiding the prohibition of carrying on Shabbos by putting up an Eruv. But that is the source of that malacha actually comes from this parak. How do we get that? So there is a discussion over the course of Meseches Shabbos. In Meseches Shabbos, Daf Mem Tes Amud Beis, we learn the following. Tanya Kamand Amar, actually, before we get to that, the Gemara discusses, how do we learn the 39 malachos? How do we know that there are 39 malachos? So the Gemara tells us. So there's actually a machlokas in the Gemara. The Gemara says, Amar Luhu Rabbi Chanina Barchama, Keneged Avodas HaMishkan, right? I correspond to the labors of the Mishkan. A little bit of a question whether it has to do with the labors of building the Mishkan or the labors of operating the Mishkan, but either way, having to do with the Mishkan. And then Amar Luhu Rabbi Yochanan, Rabbi Elazar, no, Kacham Rabbi Shemaya, Bar Rabbi Yossi Ben Likonia, Keneged Milacha, Milachto Umeleches Shebetorah Arboim Chaser Achas. If you add up the words Milacha, Milachto, and Meleches every time it appears in the Torah, you will come out to 39. That's the suggestion of the Gemara. So the Rishonim on the Mefarshim on this Gemara ask, that's very impressive that you came up with that. The only problem is that it's not true, right? That those words seem to appear fairly regularly over the course of the Torah. They come out to much more than that. So he actually, in the footnote here from the Art Scroll, he quotes the Netzach Yisrael, who is cited in the Torah Shleima, points out that if the possessive word Meleches is not counted, right, you don't use that word, just Malachto and Malacha. Malachas is one of them, and maybe there's different, I'm not sure what he means, then you actually come out to 39. If you don't use possessive, you just talk about descriptions of work, so then you actually get to the number. But well, that's a difficult answer. Others, you know, try to figure out how the Gemara would come up with that. But anyways, that is the machlokas of the Gemara. But more prominently is the first opinion that we learned out from the Melechas HaMishkan. So Gemara comments later on in that Amud. Yeah?
It's
got
to be a gematria explanation, right? It's got to be some reason why 39 and Melechas are related.
Oh.
I'm not an expert in gematria. I'm just saying.
The Gemara's line is, nope, that's we count out to 39. Now you could talk to your Rebbe. You could talk to Zev also. I was thinking who might have ideas. But it sounds like for the Gemara, yeah, they looked through the Torah, came up with that amount. Oh, look at that. Well, there must be 39 malachos. So that obviously is based on, there's a very strong Torah Shebal Peh aspect to that, obviously. But anyways, the Gemara tells us, Tanya Kamand Amar Keneged Avodas HaMishkan. According to the idea that it is corresponding to the work and to the malachos that are done in the Mishkan, where do we see it? The Tanya in Chayiv in Ela Malachos Shekiyotzi B'Haisa Mishkan. One is only Chayiv in the way that it was done in the Mishkan, that they planted and they reaped, and then him halu es hakrashim mikarka la'agala. They lifted the boards from the ground onto the wagons. Vatem lo tachnisu mishus harab l'rishus yachid. Similarly, you may also not take something from rishus harab and put into rishus yachid. Similarly, him hiridu es hakrashim mi'agala l'karka. They also lowered the boards from the wagons onto the ground. So you don't do that either. Vatem lo tachnisu mishus yachid l'rishus harab. You can't. You both also can't. Shouldn't take something from rishus yachid to rishus harabim. And finally, him hotziu mi'agala la'agala. They also transfer from one wagon to another wagon. Vatem lo tachnisu mishus yachid l'rishus yachid. And you may not transfer from one Rishusi Yachid to another Rishusi Yachid. The Gemara asks, really, that's a problem? You're really not allowed to do that? So Abayv Rava Dami Shabbai, no, V'tema Rava Bar Ava, Rishusi Yachid, Rishusi Yachid, Derech Rishusi Rabim, to do it via Rishusi Rabim. So the idea is that they set up two wagons next to the Mishkan, and they load it from one onto the other, and then onto the next one. That's how they make it up. And there was apparently Dalet Amos between the two wagons, and that was part of the Melechas HaMishkan. That was part of the Avodah of the Mishkan. Yes, Sam, what's your problem?
I'm trying to follow the logic on what the two wagons, how does that avoid something?
No, you're not avoiding anything. That's a malacha. That describes the malacha of. I mean, the wagon is considered Rishus HaYachid. The assumption is that it was 4x4 amos and 10 tefachim high. The wall, at least around it, was 10 tefachim high. So therefore, that qualified as its own Rishus HaYachid. And the ground is Rishus HaRabim. Correct. So you're going from one wagon to the next wagon. You go from Rishus HaYachid to Rishus HaYachid. And therefore, that is also a violation, provided that you're going through Rishus HaRabim itself. Meaning if you go from one house to the next house, if there's only a window between, you know, just the connecting houses, that would be mutter. But those are the three things. And all learned out from this issue of taking apart the Mishkan and placing it on wagons. Now, there is actually, in Rabbi Ribiat's book, he actually writes something pretty impressive. He says there is much written on the prohibition of Hotzah. In fact, he says, I don't know, he doesn't say how he quantifies it, there is more Gemara about the Malacha of Hotzah than any other Halacha in the Torah. Is the thing, right? Probably at least probably a third of Masechah Shabbos and 90% of Masechah's Erevin, right, all have to do with this Malacha. So it is obviously a massive Malacha, and there is a lot that we are to also demonstrate that we're careful about. There is the famous, is the only malacha that we, I don't know the only, but perhaps the only malacha that we are willing to be oker davar min haTorah for, that we are willing to, in order to ensure that malacha is observed properly and that there not be any breakdowns in that malacha, even though this mitzvah is not going to cause a breakdown of that malacha, we will still waive mitzvos in order to ensure that the malacha of Hotzah stands strong. What mitzvah am I talking about?
Blowing
the horn. That's right. Blowing shofar on Rosh Hashanah, or Netilas Lulav on Sukkot, or Megillah on Purim. All three of those, well, Megillah on Purim perhaps is only Derabanan, perhaps, but the other two are mitzvahs d'oraisa, or potentially mitzvahs d'oraisa. We would not do them on Shabbos. We would sit down and not do those mitzvahs, because of a concern, not because they will automatically lead to Hotzah, but because of a concern that it will lead to Hotzah. I would add the Ha'ara that it could be that the concern of Hotzah is perhaps more prominent with the mitzvah of Sukkah than it is with the mitzvah of Lulav. Right, the mitzvah of Lulav, you can make sure the Lulav's in the proper place before. Sukkah is more difficult. In fact, in places where there's no Erevs, so Sukkot is when you have to like learn these halachas, because in order to get the food from your house to the sukkah, that could be a significant challenge if there is no community Erev. But there you go. That is a so that demonstrates the chumrah of it, that how important it is, that it takes up more real estate in Shas than other mitzvos. And also there is the Gezeirah D'Ravah against it. There's also Psukim in Yirmiyah that seem to describe that was a cause of destruction of the Beis HaMikdash, that people will carry on Shabbos, and I will bring a fire to the temple in terms of violence. That's in Pasuk, Perek Yud Zayin, Pasuk Chaf Aleph. Okay, so the Rambam is also, not just does it take up so much real estate, it also is what opens up Malacha of Shabbos. Generally, one learns it's Shabbos is a very hard body of excuse me. Thank you. Shabbos is in general a very hard body of malachos to learn because there's a lot of, first of all, it's huge. There is a lot of material on it. There is a lot of overlap from one section to another. To learn it straight through the Gemara is very difficult, because the Gemara itself is not in any particular order of malachos, or much of it is just going back and forth. And there's a lot of overlap from one malacha to the next. You almost have to learn all of Hilchos Shabbos before you can turn around and start learning all of Hilchos Shabbos. It's that type of limud. But beyond that, the malachas of Hotzah are particular. So it is interesting. So where would one start? So it's a challenge to start. Many start with just learn the malachas in order. That could be one way of doing it. But how does Maseches Shabbos start? Maseches Shabbos starts with the malacha of Hotzah. Malacha number 39. Right. So there is a description there. The first mission of Maseches Shabbos describes two malachos and two that are toldos. if a person malacha is the way we understand malacha is the way it was actually done in the Beis HaMikdash, as opposed to a tolda, which is extrapolated from the way it was done in the Beis HaMikdash. So the Gemara describes that if you are inside a that you are the one in Rishus HaRabim and you pass it into Rishus HaYachid, you violate the malacha. If you're in Rishus HaYachid and accept it from Rishus HaRabim, so then you're violating a tolda. Why? Because that's a copying of the way it was done in the Mishkan, right? In the Mishkan, they took down the board and passed it into the wagons, right? So, or similarly, you passed from, right. So that is the malacha, and that's how Masechta Shabbos opens up, with that type of description. Also, if one is receiving, so the receiver, right? If you receive it from out and bring it in, you violate a malacha. If you're right, if you're just receiving it inside, so then that would only be a. Is that it? I have to have it right here. If the ani puts his hand inside and puts something into the hands of the balabais, or he takes from it and and the ani takes it out, so then he is chayiv. Balabais putter, and the balabais will be putter. Pasha balabais is yadu l'chutz. Oh, sorry, it's not really. Okay, I'm forgetting which ones are the malachas. We've got to work out which ones are the malachas, which ones are the toldos. But either way, the toldos pointed out. Anyway, we'll get to that in a second. So the Rambam, so it's interesting that the Masechta Shabbos opens up with these halachas. So why would that be? So the Rambam in his Perusha Mishnayos says two ideas. Number one is that in our world, if the Eruv is down, so the Eruv is down, it's not such a problem. But back in the good old days, if there was no Eruv, not everything was in the house. There was no running water in the house. You did not have cooling things in the house, right? You have to go to the well in the morning in order to get water. The idea of carrying wasn't just a luxury, it was a necessity just for basic needs. So that's number one. And perhaps it is the most commonly challenged. Perhaps the biggest challenge of a malacha in order to keep in the absence of an eruv. Second of all, is that it is also abstract, that it is a challenging malacha to learn, because there is a major difference between the malacha of carrying on Shabbos versus all other 38 malachos. Can we think of what that distinction is? Do we know? That all other 38 malachos is, how do we define malacha, right? Why is it that turning on a light switch is a problem on Shabbos while doing 50 push-ups is not? I mean, no. What's the definition of malacha?
Creative
activity, correct. That the malachas are defined as creative activity. So the malacha of Hutzah is different than all other 38 malacha in that there is nothing being created. It is the only malacha that does not require creative activity in order to take place. Therefore, it is labeled as a malacha garua, which literally means a lesser malacha. Now, it does not mean that it is any type of less of the stringency of the prohibition, but it is known as a malacha garua, a sort of quote-unquote lesser prohibition. Why? For this reason, says Tosos, on the very first page of Masechta Shabbos. Because you are lacking the dynamic of a creative thing. You are just moving things from one to another. And in fact, continues Tosos and says, that's why you actually need a different limud for the different aspects of it. Remember, the Gemara was interesting, right? Based on the fact that you take it, they pass from public into private, and they took pass from private into public, and they pass from private to private. It taught an individual halacha from each. Why couldn't you have just had one? And we could extrapolate from that anything like that is going to be problem. Why do you need a specific source for each? So suggest Tosos, because this malacha is different than all other malachas. That all other malachas have to do with creation, and we could try to figure out what is similar to that type of creation, as opposed to Hotza, where you're not creating anything. So therefore, you need a specific source to demonstrate the different parts that are prohibited. So Tosus continues on and says that that doesn't mean that there are not toldos with regards to this malacha. In fact, there are. What are the toldos of this malacha? So Tosus says, Mali da'zorek dalet amos b'shus harabim. Right? So carrying four amos in b'shus harabim, so that is not on that list of things that are prohibited or explicitly was done at the Mishkan, but that could be extrapolated. So that's assumed carrying four amos in public domains is considered to be a iser d'oraisa, a tolda of this issue. And also, right, the idea of lachnisa de bal habayis de lo hava b'mishkan, right, the idea of bringing in, that the person in the house brings from outside into the house, if he's already standing inside, that he claims would be a tolda. But one requires further sources on this because of the idea that it is in fact referred to as a malacha garua. Okay, so that is sort of like the introduction to the malacha of Otsai. I had in mind to talk about one detail of it today as well. But you want to say something?
I have a question about, if you gave an example of bringing water from your well.
Mm-hmm.
If the well is on your property, that's considered going through Rishus HaRabim? What is the...
Well, it depends with your property. We recognize the distinction between Rishus HaRabim and Rishus HaYachid by walls, not by boundary markers. So you would have to surround what?
So unless you have an arrow for a wall, it's not your property.
Well, it might be, but it's right. Quantified as Rishus HaRabim, I believe. I assume that is the case.
What makes it a commonly?
Now we're talking. Now you're starting to get into some details here, right? And that is perhaps the biggest question with regards to, and the biggest controversy regarding building community eruvs is this distinction: that how does one define a Rishus HaRabim? How does one define a public space? So the Shulchan Aruch Simon Shin Mem Hei Sif Zayin says as follows: Ezehu Rishus HaRabim Rechovos Veshukim HaRechovim Tes Zayin Am. It needs to be 16 amos wide. All this is based on issues in the way Bnei Yisrael set up their camps in the Midbar. Maybe we'll get to them as we continue on. But Ve'ina Mekorim that if they are 16 and they don't have a cover and they don't have a roof and they don't have a wall around it. And even if they do, if you could go straight from one end to another, and there are no doors that close at night, have a Rishus HaRabim. That is considered a Rishus HaRabim. So if it is surrounded if you have a street that is 16 amos wide, and there's nothing that covers it, and there's no walls around it, so you have a Rishus, that is considered Rishus HaRabim Doraisa. And even if there are walls around it, if you have a road that goes straight from one end to another, so that could also be considered a Rishus HaRabim Doraisa. So that actually is part of the issue with City Avenue, that City Avenue, some consider that it is a straight line from one to another. If you look at a map, that's not the case. Even if you drive it, you'll notice that it's not the case. But that is one of the issues with regards to City Avenue. What?
So you can't put an arrow around a Rishus HaRabim.
So what if, and then one sec, one more thing. V'yesh omrim, and then there are some say, shekol she'in shishim ribu overim bo b'chol yom ein Rishus HaRabim, that there's not 600,000 people that go there every day, pass over it every day, and it's unclear what that means exactly, but that pass over it every day, so then it is not considered a Rishus HaRabim either. So if it is wider than 16 amos, that could be, but perhaps, and there are some that say that even if it is that wide, if there are not 600,000 people there regularly, whatever that means, it is not considered then a Rishus HaRabim. So for our purposes in city Eruv, so pretty much every city Eruv is going to have streets in it that are 16 amos wide, which would make it a Rishus HaRabim d'oraisa. But they try not to, these streets often will not have 600,000 people crossing on it. A place like City Avenue is something like 40,000 or something. Most places don't even come close. 600,000 is really a lot. But it's unclear if that means living there, if it means circling, it means crossing over anywhere. It's unclear what the 600,000 means, but assume that it, assume that this area would have less than 600,000. So what's the issue here? There is another level though. That is that even if these areas perhaps will not qualify as a Rishus HaRabim d'oraisa, it will qualify as a Carmelis. A Carmelis is best referred to as a Rishus HaRabim d'rabbanan. Now, who cares, right? As Orthodox Jews, we keep d'oraisas as well as d'rabbanans. So what does it matter whether it's a Rishus HaRabim d'oraisa or whether it's a Rishus HaRabim d'rabbanan? So for reasons that we'll not get into now, a wire Eruv can only work in a Rishus HaRabim D'Rabbanon and not in a Rishus HaRabim D'Oraisa. So the Eruvin that we set up in our cities that have strings that go above it, so the assumption is that could only work assuming that it is a Rishus HaRabim D'Rabbanon, that it is a Rabbinic Rishus HaRabim. Okay? It's good so far.
Yeah, so
good so far.
If it was D'Oraisa, then you'd have to
have
like a real solid wall.
Correct. You would have to have a wall, or as the Ramah adds in here, you would have to have delassos that are closed at night. Now, it doesn't mean that necessarily is you know, that delassos issue of, also I'll have to speak about another time. Was? Gates, yeah. Gates, yeah. Or doors, or I don't know, maybe a tennis court that could spread across the street in the middle of the night and no one will know about, right? So that perhaps is what delassos mean. Our Eruv did not have delassos. I don't know if the Lower Marian Eruv does. I don't think they do. Okay, so...
It doesn't have intentional
gates. What?
It doesn't have any gates.
Right, but in some Eruvs, they actually put these delassos there to close it, to be able to show as if to
complete the Eruv.
They yeah, like the, and they'll have a tennis court, a tennis net that will stretch across in order to be able to potentially close it, even though they won't. Fine. So it is interesting. Two things. Number one, you know, so we don't rely on the 16 amos thing. We rely on the 600,000, right? That we assume because we don't have 600,000 people traveling on our streets, so we have the right to call that a karmelis, and therefore have the right to use a wire eruv in those places. Now the only problem is, at first glance, that seems to go against the klalei hapsak of Shulchan Aruch. It seems to go against Shulchan Aruch, even though Shulchan Aruch quotes it. Why is that? Because there is a rule, when the Shulchan Aruch quotes multiple opinions, so there is a rule, stam v'yesh halacha kistam, that if the Shulchan Aruch just says a halacha, and then it says, and some say the following, so he really means the paskin like the first way, and not like the second way. That is the way we normally assume the rules of the way the Shulchan Aruch is written. I don't think the Shulchan Aruch actually ever gave those rules himself, but that is the presumed way that we understand the Pesach of the Shulchan Aruch. Right? So, Bevad Yosef, well, yeah.
It gives you an out if you make a mistake.
Okay, maybe you can rely on it, Shas Adchak, and those kinds of things, right?
Right.
So, the... so.
Why are you using a string?
A string ear, a wire string ear, yeah.
As opposed to a wall.
As opposed to a wall, right. Or a door, or a, you know, or a hill.
I was thinking about the word wire after me. You mean a string.
Yeah. Okay. Wire equals string, correct. So I know you have a dream of being able to wire the whole Eruv and just be able to flip a switch and see if the current goes through the whole thing. Yeah. We worked this morning on simplifying the Eruv this morning, actually. There could be a change coming that will... Not that big of a help, but decent help. No, not there. But the City Avenue, the drive along City Avenue, we might be able to get the Eruv off City Avenue pretty soon. Hopefully.
Which part? Up by St. Joe's?
From where Tirani's house is until Overbrook, until Lancaster.
Mm-hmm. So it was on the other side of the sidewalk before, and it was moved the street.
Now
it's
got a
little back.
No, not by Yentis, by Lancaster. Those like 6-7 blocks. That, yeah. All right. So how do we avoid this Yesh Omrim issue? So Ravad Yosef raises this issue. In fact, Ravad Yosef in Yabi Omer says, well, the Shulchan Aruch seems to be passing. We pass in Stam V'yesh. So therefore, the Shulchan Aruch seems to be passing that the 600,000 heter is not a good heter. It's held by, you know, Rashi and Tosos on the page talk about it, but many Rishonim don't bring it up and don't assume that it is correct. So Ravad Yosef says Shulchan Aruch is passing like the first way, and he's quoting the second way in terms of a Shasad Chak. But then he says, suggests that, well, maybe that's only true, that idea that a stam v'yesh, the halacha is like the stam, maybe that's only when he's quoting two opinions that disagree with each other. But in this case, it's a little different. In this case, the Shulchan Aruch is quoting a Gemara, and the Yesh Omrim are Rishonim on that Gemara. Right? So as opposed to a machlokas Rambam and Rif, or really it's the Rif Rush against the Rambam. So it'll be the Rif, he'll quote the Rif and the Rush as the halacha, and then the Yesh over him, the Rambam, disagrees. He says, that's not what's going on here. Here it's a Gemara, and there are Rishonim that modify the Gemara. So he says, perhaps then you can rely on it. And Rabbi Simon here quotes in the Sefer Imre Baruch on page 56, and he says, and this is what I heard, that when Rabbi Cutler came to America, he wanted to be machmir and say that any street that is wider than 16 amos, one has to be machmir on, when one would have to treat as Rosh Hashanah d'oraisa. He says, however, Rav Moshe argued with him and said, no, the minhag Yisrael hamakubal midoros hakadmonim, the accepted minhag amongst Klal Yisrael, is to rely on the opinion of Rashi and Tosfos, and that perhaps is the way to defend it as also being the psak of the Shulchan Aruch. There is one more thought on this, and that is, say it quickly, and that is, but it's still, by the way, so the Be'er Halacha on the page of Mishnah Berurah is all of this, and he quotes all of the Rishonim that say that it should be a problem, and he quotes a few that say that it's Machmir, and he says, by the way, this is why V'vadi Yish L'Hachmir Kesar Rishonim, that it makes sense to be Machmir like the first opinion, and not to rely on neighborhood Erevin. And those people that don't rely on neighborhood Erevin that's the reason. I shouldn't say that's the only reason. That is often the reason that people don't rely on neighborhood Erevin, because they're relying on the Makel Shita of Rashi and Tosos against many Rishonim that don't hold that way. But still, if this is a Malacha d'Oraisa, I mean, we generally are Machmir. Like, it's like raising these issues and say, oh, so now you have the right to say that maybe, but like, this is a Din d'Oraisa potentially we're talking about. So why would it be permissible at all? So they quote from the Mishnas Yaakov, I believe, although I couldn't find it inside this morning, but I believe from the Mishnas Yaakov, who suggests that the idea that a wire Eruv doesn't work when you have a Rosh Hashanah Rabbim D'Oraisa, is that a Din D'Rabbanan or is that a Din D'Oraisa?
Whoa. Does D'Oraisa talk about
Yeah, we have an idea that it should work on a level of d'oraisa, because it's a tzuras ha-pesach, right? It is a wire that is set up as a doorway. So that doorway, the fact that we say that we won't rely on those, on a tzuras ha-pesach, on a wire, string, those kinds of things, when it comes to Rosh Hashanah Rabbim d'oraisa, is that a biblical issue, or is that a rabbinic issue? So the issue is, Yaakov suggests that really is only a rabbinic issue. That d'oraisa, everybody agrees that a wire eruv would work. It's only a din d'rabbanan that we say a wire eruv doesn't work when it's a din d'oraisa. So assuming that we have our wires up, so one can say that certainly on a level of d'oraisa we're being yotzei. It's only really a suffix on a level of d'rabbanan. If that's the case, then one has the right to rely on Rashi and Tosos in order to be makel. I say, like, you know, certainly, you know, Bnei Yeshiva often are machmer on this and try not to carry and use city Irvin. But once somebody has children, it becomes very difficult to say that. He has Rabbi Ribian here, has like a four-page thing where he talks about how, you know, we should rely on these and one should be machmer. And, you know, women complain that they're going to be stuck in home. They should be taught that they should bask in the sanctity of Shabbos and those kinds of things. I remember mentioning this to one of my mentors, who said to me, anybody who's telling women to bask in the holiness, you know, you don't want to go there. And I would just say that this really seems to be a kula that Bnei Yisrael has accepted. Dr. Ekman has, and I'll tell that story offline. So I'll stop here. Have a good Shabbos, and we'll pick up with some other things next week.
So